A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know, Korn, this whole show runs on GPU compute, and we wouldn't be here without Modal.
Seriously. And that's what powers all our text-to-speech. Everything you're hearing right now.
They're an AI infrastructure platform. Developers use them to run GPU workloads in the cloud with zero infrastructure headaches.
If you're building anything with AI, check them out. Modal.com. Have you ever noticed how some people can sit with a dense technical manual for 3 hours and emerge with a complete mental map of the system, while others, and I suspect a lot of our listeners fall into this camp, would much rather have that same information poured into their ears while they're doing the dishes or driving to work? It is a fascinating divide in how we consume complexity.
It really is, Korn. And it is a perfectly timed topic because Daniel actually sent us a note about this very thing. He said, I love this podcast because I gravitate towards audio learning. It relaxes me and is probably my natural mode of acquiring information. What do people who prefer audio over written material have in common?
That is a great hook from Daniel. And before we dive into the meat of the neuroscience here, we should mention that today's episode is powered by Google Gemini 1.5 Flash. It is helping us pass through some of the denser cognitive research Daniel pointed us toward. Now, Herman Poppleberry, you are the resident expert on deep dives. When Daniel says it relaxes him, is that just a personal quirk? Or is there a biological reason why listening to a voice feels fundamentally different than scanning a page?
There is a massive biological component to that, Korn. We have to start by separating the myth from the mechanism. You know we have talked about the learning styles myth before, the idea that you are strictly a visual or auditory learner and can't learn any other way. That has been largely debunked. However, what is very real is a cognitive processing preference. For many people, the path of least resistance for high-level conceptual information is the auditory canal.
So it is not that we can't read. It is that our brains are essentially choosing the high-occupancy vehicle lane for sound.
Precisely. Think about the evolutionary timeline. Humans have been communicating via complex speech for roughly 200,000 years. Reading and writing? That is a blink of an eye in evolutionary terms, maybe 5,000 years for the earliest scripts, and widespread literacy is even more recent. Our brains are biologically optimized for oral storytelling. When you listen to a podcast, you are tapping into an ancient campfire instinct.
I love that image. Me, a sloth, hanging from a branch by a campfire, listening to some ancient donkey explain how to flintknap a spearhead. It feels more natural because, for most of our history, if you didn't catch the information the first time it was spoken, you just missed out. There was no scrolling back to the previous paragraph of a mammoth hunt.
That's a vital point. The ephemeral nature of sound actually forces a different kind of presence. But let's get technical. What is actually happening in the brain when Daniel hits play on an episode versus when he opens a white paper? When you read, you are primarily engaging the left hemisphere of the brain, specifically areas like the visual word form area and the angular gyrus. You are decoding symbols into sounds, then sounds into meaning. It is a high effort translation process.
So reading is like a solo performance on a piano. But listening is the full orchestral arrangement.
That is a great way to put it. But wait, I want to push that piano analogy further. Reading is like looking at the sheet music. You have to know the notation. You have to translate the dots on the page into the idea of a sound. And then finally, you hear it in your head. Listening is just hearing the music. You skip the translation layer entirely. And that right brain engagement is why Daniel feels relaxed. Research shows that listening to a familiar, prosodic voice can actually trigger alpha brain waves. Those are the waves associated with relaxed alertness. You are calm, your cortisol levels are lower, but you are still intellectually receptive. Reading, by contrast, often keeps you in a high-intensity beta wave state. It is work.
That explains a lot. I always feel like I'm fighting the page when I'm reading a dry API documentation, but if I hear an engineer talk through the logic, it just clicks. Now, Daniel mentioned a commonality among audio lovers. Is there a specific personality profile here? Are we all just lazy readers, or is there something deeper?
It is definitely deeper. A major study in 2022 published in PLOS One looked at the personality traits of heavy podcast listeners. They found a very consistent profile. These individuals tend to be exceptionally high in openness to experience. They are intellectually curious, they crave diverse perspectives, and they have what psychologists call a high need for cognition.
Wait, high need for cognition? That sounds like a fancy way of saying we can't turn our brains off. Is that why I feel the need to listen to a documentary about fungal networks while I'm brushing my teeth?
Essentially, yes. People who prefer audio learning often use it to fill the gaps in their day. They are the ones listening while folding laundry or commuting. They don't just want to be entertained. They want their brains to be working on a problem or learning a new concept even when their hands are busy. There is also a strong correlation with high empathy. Because audio carries the human element, the warmth or sarcasm in a voice. Audio learners are often more tuned into the social and emotional context of information.
That makes sense. It is harder to feel a connection to a sans-serif font than it is to a person's actual voice. But I want to push back on the efficiency part. If I'm listening while I'm doing the dishes, am I actually learning as well as I would be if I were sitting down with a book? Or am I just enjoying the vibe? I mean, if I'm scrubbing a stubborn lasagna pan, is my brain really absorbing the nuances of Kubernetes?
That is the million-dollar question. And there is a very specific trade-off that we need to talk about. A 2024 study from the MIT Media Lab actually tracked developers learning new technical frameworks. They split them into two groups. One used audio-only tutorials, and the other used text-based documentation. The results were fascinating. The audio learners showed 15% better retention of the conceptual relationships, the big picture stuff. They understood why the framework was built the way it was and how the components interacted.
But I bet there is a catch. There's always a catch when the big picture looks too good.
There is a huge catch. Those same audio learners were 20% worse at recalling specific syntax details. They knew what the function was supposed to do, but they couldn't remember exactly where the brackets went or the specific naming conventions as well as the text group did. Think of it like this. The audio group remembered the plot of the code, while the text group remembered the spelling of the code.
So audio is for the soul of the code, and text is for the grammar. I can see why that would be a struggle for engineers. If you get the concept but miss a semicolon, the program doesn't run. It's like knowing exactly how a car engine works in theory, but not knowing which size wrench you need to actually bolt it together.
And this points to something called cognitive load theory. Reading requires a lot of working memory for the act of decoding. If you have any kind of working memory bottleneck, which is very common in people with ADHD or dyslexia, reading can feel like trying to run a high-end game on an old processor. The system lags. Audio bypasses that decoding step. It pours the meaning directly into the semantic system.
You mentioned ADHD. I've heard a lot of people in the tech world say that podcasts are their lifesavers because they struggle to focus on long-form text. Is there a specific neurological link there? Does the audio act like a sort of mental fidget spinner?
For many neurodivergent individuals, audio serves as a form of passive stimulation. It occupies the distractible part of the brain, the part that wants to look out the window or fidget, which then allows the executive function part of the brain to focus on the task at hand. It is sometimes called body doubling or white noise with substance. If the silence is too loud, the brain wanders. But if there is a steady stream of interesting information, it anchors the attention.
I've definitely felt that. It's like the audio provides a track for the train to run on. Without it, the train just goes off into the weeds. But let's talk about the intimacy of it. Daniel said it relaxes him. There's that term parasocial relationship that gets thrown around a lot. Are we essentially hacking our social brains to learn better?
We really are. Think about where your earbuds sit. They are literally inside your head. When you listen to a podcast, the voice isn't across the room. It is vibrating inside your skull. UCLA research shows a hierarchy of intimacy where audio is the sweet spot. In person is best, obviously, but audio is actually more intimate than video in some ways because it lacks the cognitive load of processing facial expressions and visual cues. You just get the pure emotional data of the voice.
It's the intimacy of a phone call versus the performance of a Zoom meeting. On a Zoom call, I'm worried about my lighting and whether I have spinach in my teeth. With audio, those visual anxieties vanish.
Precisely. Your brain starts to categorize the host's voice as a trusted friend. This lowers your defensive barriers. When you are reading a text, you might be more critical or skeptical. But when a trusted voice explains something, your brain enters a state of high receptivity. You are more likely to internalize the concepts because you aren't fighting the messenger. It's why people say they hear their favorite podcast host's voices in their head when they're making decisions later.
That sounds like a double-edged sword, Herman. It's great for learning React hooks from a friendly expert, but maybe not so great if the person in your ear is selling snake oil. If the trust is built on the medium rather than the message, that's a vulnerability.
That is the danger of the parasocial loop. But for technical education, it is a massive advantage. It allows for a more conversational, nuanced exploration of topics that might feel intimidating on the page. It makes the hard sciences feel like a soft conversation.
So, we've established that audio lovers are often high openness, high empathy, possibly neurodivergent, and looking for a lower cognitive load way to stay intellectually active. But I want to go deeper into the second order effects. If the world is moving toward this audio-first consumption, I mean, Daniel's note mentioned that 38% of Americans are listening to podcasts monthly now, how does that change the way we actually think? Are we losing the ability to handle the syntax, like that MIT study suggested? Are we becoming a species that understands the why, but forgets the how?
It is a real concern. If we only consume information through audio, we might become a society of big-picture thinkers who can't implement the details. We might have a million architects and no bricklayers. That is why we are seeing the rise of audio-native technical documentation. Have you heard about the tools coming out in 26 that generate spoken code explanations?
I haven't. Is it just a robot reading code? Because that sounds like a nightmare. Open bracket, blue, 4, semicolon. I'd rather listen to a dial-up modem.
No, it is much smarter than that. It is AI that interprets the code and explains the logic in a narrative format. Instead of reading out every bracket, it says, okay, here we are initializing a state variable to track the user's login status, and then we are using a hook to trigger a re-render whenever that status changes. It focuses on the intent. It turns the syntax back into a story.
Okay, that I could get behind. It's like having a senior dev sitting next to you explaining their thought process. But what does this mean for the future of how we teach? Should we be getting rid of textbooks and just giving everyone a set of high-end headphones?
I don't think we get rid of text, but we definitely need to change how we design audio. If you are a content creator or an educator, you have to compensate for the fact that the listener can't easily jump back 3 paragraphs to reread a sentence. You have to build in what I call structural repetition. You need to signpost everything. You say, we just covered the neurological basis. Now we are moving to the social implications. You have to give the listener a mental map because they don't have a visual one.
It's like driving without a GPS versus driving with one. In a book, I can see how many pages are left. I can flip to the index. In an audio file, I'm just in the dark unless the host tells me where we are. Does that mean audio learners need more recap moments than readers do?
In a text, the reader controls the pace. In audio, the host controls the pace. To bridge that gap, the host has to offer islands of stability, brief summaries every 10 minutes or so. And there is this fascinating concept of the intimacy gap. We talked about how audio is more intimate than text. This means that for complex, controversial, or highly nuanced topics, audio is actually a superior medium. You can hear the nuance. You can hear when a speaker is being cautious versus when they are certain. You lose all of that in a transcript.
I wonder if that's why some of the most successful technical podcasts aren't just lectures. They're conversations, like what we do here. If it was just you monologuing for 40 minutes, I'd probably fall asleep, and I'm a sloth. I'm a professional at sleeping. But because we're bouncing ideas back and forth, it keeps the listener's brain engaged in a social way. We're essentially mimicking a tribal council.
It's the social brain hypothesis. Our brains are designed to track conversations. We are much better at remembering a story told by 2 people than a list of facts delivered by 1. When you and I disagree or tease each other, it creates a narrative tension that helps the information stick. The brain thinks, oh, there's a conflict here. I should probably pay attention to how this is resolved.
So, for all the Daniels out there who feel like they learn better this way, the takeaway isn't that they're doing it wrong. It's that they've found a way to leverage their brain's natural affinity for social, prosodic information. But Herman, if I'm an audio-first learner and I really need to master something detail-heavy, let's say I'm studying for a cloud architecture certification, how do I bridge that gap? How do I make sure those syntax details don't just evaporate the moment I take my headphones off?
That is where dual modality learning comes in. The most effective way to learn today is to use audio for the conceptual heavy lifting, the why and the how, and then use text as a high fidelity reference for the specifics. You listen to the podcast to get the mental model, which reduces the cognitive load when you finally sit down with the documentation. You aren't seeing the information for the first time, you are just filling in the details of a map you already have.
It's like watching a movie before you read the book. You already know what the characters look like and what the plot is, so you can focus on the prose. Or like looking at a photo of a finished Lego set before you open the instruction manual. You know what you're building, so the individual steps make more sense.
That is a perfect analogy. And for those with ADHD, this is a game changer. If you try to jump straight into a 500-page manual, your brain might reject it because it doesn't see the reward at the end. But if you listen to 3 hours of deep dive discussions on the topic first, your brain is primed. It is interested. The dopamine is already flowing. You've built the hunger for the details.
I think we should also touch on the physical side of this. We haven't mentioned the actual hardware, but for an audio learner, the quality of the sound matters, doesn't it? If I'm listening to a scratchy, low bitrate recording, is that increasing my cognitive load? Does my brain have to work harder to repair the audio?
Massively. There is a study on cognitive fluency that shows if the audio quality is poor, the brain has to work harder just to decode the phonemes, the individual sounds of the words. That takes resources away from understanding the meaning. It is why people get fatigued during bad cell phone calls. If you are an audio learner, investing in a good pair of headphones isn't just a luxury, it is a cognitive upgrade. You want the voice to sound as natural and close as possible to maximize that alpha wave production. If the audio is sharp or tinny, it triggers a mild stress response instead of that relaxation Daniel mentioned.
So we're basically telling Daniel he has permission to buy those expensive noise-canceling headphones he's been eyeing. It's for science, Daniel. It's for your brain. It's not a gadget, it's a semantic intake optimization device.
It really is. And you know, we should talk about the rise of AI-generated audio in this context. We are starting to see people take their entire Read Later List articles, papers, newsletters, and run them through high-quality TTS engines. It turns the graveyard of unread tabs into a daily learning ritual. It's a way of reclaiming time that used to be dead air.
I do that all the time, but I found that if the voice is too robotic, I tune out. It has to have that prosody you mentioned. If it doesn't have the rhythm of human speech, my brain just treats it like a fan or a refrigerator hum. I've noticed some AI voices now even add breaths or ums, just to keep the human brain from flagging it as fake.
That is the right hemisphere looking for emotional data. If the AI voice is flat, your right brain says, there is no human here, nothing to see, and it shuts down. But the newer models, like what we're seeing with some of the advanced voice clones, are getting so good at mimicking that human rhythm that they can actually trigger the same oxytocin release as a real person. We are entering an era where the voice of a book might be just as important as the text itself.
That is a bit wild to think about. We're being bonded to machines because they've learned how to talk like our friends. But if it helps us learn, maybe that's the trade-off. Let's look at the practical takeaways for a second. If you recognize yourself in this description, high openness, low neuroticism, someone who uses audio to regulate their mood and learn, how do you optimize your life for this?
First, lean into it. Stop feeling guilty that you haven't finished that stack of books on your nightstand. If your brain prefers audio, feed it audio, but be intentional. Use your downtime for conceptual learning, but acknowledge that you will need a visual or kinesthetic secondary step for the details. If you listen to a podcast about a new programming language, make a commitment to spend 15 minutes looking at the actual code right after. Don't let the big picture be the only picture.
And for creators, if you're a manager or an engineer trying to explain a complex system to your team, maybe don't just send a long email. Maybe an audio summary is the way to go.
Record a quick 5-minute voice memo or a video. The tone of your voice will convey the urgency, the nuance, and the confidence in a way that text never will. It reduces the chance of misinterpretation, which is a huge source of friction in technical teams. We've all received that "we need to talk" email that sounds terrifying, but if it were a voice memo, you'd hear the casual tone and realize it's not a crisis.
I also think the idea of chunking is huge. When you're listening, you don't have chapters you can see. So, as a listener, if I'm tackling a 2-hour deep dive, I should probably break it up into 30-minute segments to let the information settle. Otherwise, it's just a data dump that overflows the buffer.
And use the playback speed to your advantage. Some people find that their need for cognition is so high that normal human speech is too slow. Their brain starts to wander because the input isn't fast enough. Speeding it up to 1.5 or even 2x speed can actually increase focus for some people because it forces the brain to stay locked in to keep up. It's like a mental treadmill. If it's moving too slow, you start looking around, but if it's at a brisk pace, you have to run.
I'm a sloth, Herman. I listen to everything at 0.75 speed, just so I can feel like everyone is on my level. It makes the world feel much more manageable.
Well, that works too. It's all about finding your personal cognitive sweet spot. The point is that audio isn't just a secondary medium. It is a primary cognitive pathway that, for a significant portion of the population, is actually more efficient and emotionally rewarding than text. It's a different way of being literate.
It's interesting that Daniel mentioned it relaxes him. We didn't touch much on the stress management side. If you're a high-stress person, which a lot of people in tech are, does audio help with that more than reading? Is it just about the alpha waves, or is there something about the company of a voice?
It can. Reading is a solitary, quiet activity that can sometimes leave you alone with your thoughts too much. If you're stressed, those thoughts can spiral. Audio provides a companion. It provides a narrative that replaces the stressful internal monologue. It's that voice in the head effect. By letting a trusted host take over the narration of your internal world for an hour, you give your own executive function a break. It's a form of cognitive outsourcing. It's like letting someone else drive the car while you just look out the window.
I love that. I'm going to start calling this podcast a cognitive outsourcing service. We think so you don't have to. Wait, that's a terrible slogan. We think so you can think with us. It's more of a collaborative brain pooling exercise.
Much better. And really, that's what Daniel is doing. He's inviting us into his head to help him process these ideas. It's a collaborative effort between the speaker and the listener. The listener isn't just a passive bucket. They are active participants in the conversation, even if they're just listening.
So, we've got the neuroscience, the personality traits, the evolutionary history, and the practical tips. Is there anything else in the research about people who prefer audio? Anything weird? Like, do audio learners prefer certain types of food or something?
Nothing on the food front yet. But one last thing that I found fascinating is the nostalgia factor. There is some evidence that people who were read to as children have a much stronger preference for audio learning as adults. It's a deeply ingrained safety signal. When they hear a story being told, their brain flashes back to that feeling of being safe and cared for. It's not just about the information, it's about the feeling of being guided through the world. It's a return to a nurturing mode of information transfer.
That is actually really touching. So every time we do an episode, we're basically just being the world's nerdiest bedtime story for grown-ups. We're providing that same sense of guided exploration.
In a way, yes. A very technical, high-level bedtime story about API rate limits and cognitive load theory. Instead of the very hungry caterpillar, it's the very hungry data processor.
I can hear the listeners snoring already, but in a good way. In a relaxed alpha wave kind of way. It's the sound of a brain that has finally found its preferred frequency.
And that's a win in my book. If we can provide the conceptual hook that makes the hard work of learning feel a little easier, then we've done our job.
All right, I think we've given Daniel, and everyone else who feels like an audio-first learner, plenty to chew on. It's not a limitation, it's a specific type of cognitive engine. You just have to know how to fuel it. You have to know when to use the high-octane text documentation and when to cruise with the smooth audio deep dives.
And how to steer it. Don't forget the syntax, people. Keep a notepad nearby, or at least a mental folder for those pesky semicolons.
Never forget the semicolons. Well, this has been a blast. I feel like I understand my own preference for listening a lot better now. It's not just because I'm a sloth and turning pages is hard work, though that is a factor. It's because my right brain wants to join the party. It wants the prosody, the emotion, and the rhythm.
It's a full brain experience, Korn. You're just living life in high fidelity. You're using the hardware you were born with and the way it was designed to be used.
I like that. Well, let's wrap this one up. We've gone deep, we've gone wide, and I think we've earned a little downtime. Maybe I'll go listen to a podcast about sloth conservation.
I'll go read a manual on the physics of sound, just to keep the balance in the universe. I need my left brain fix for the day.
You do that, Herman Puppleberry. You do that. This has been a really enlightening look at why we do what we do. Thanks to Daniel for the prompt. It really opened up a whole different angle on how we interact with our listeners. It reminds us that the medium really is part of the message.
It really did. It's a reminder that there's a human on the other end of these earbuds, and that connection is what makes this whole thing work. Whether you're at the campfire or in a Tesla, the story remains the same.
Well said. Let's get out of here before you get too sentimental and start inducing more oxytocin release than the audience can handle. We don't want anyone getting too attached to us.
Fair enough. Let's stick to the data.
Today's exploration of the audio-first brain was a deep one. And honestly, it's made me appreciate our listeners even more. If you're out there folding laundry or stuck in traffic, just know your brain is doing some incredible multitasking right now. You're engaging ancient circuits to solve modern problems.
It really is. We covered the neurological shift from the left brain dominance of reading to the whole brain engagement of listening. The personality traits like high openness and empathy that define the audio-loving community, and the practical trade-offs between conceptual mastery and syntax recall. It's a complex ecosystem.
And don't forget the alpha waves. We're basically a spa treatment for your intellect. Before we go, we have to give a huge thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making sure our prosody is crystal clear and not taxing your cognitive load too much. He's the one who makes sure we don't sound like robots.
And a big thanks to Modal for providing the GPU credits that power the generation of this show. They make the technical heavy lifting possible, allowing us to focus on the conversation.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to dive deeper into the science of sound or the myths of learning, you can find our full archive and RSS feeds at myweirdprompts.com. We've got plenty of other audio-verse deep dives waiting for you.
We're also on Telegram. Just search for My Weird Prompts to get notified the second a new episode drops. It's the easiest way to keep your audio learning habit going without having to check a screen.
All right, that's it for us. Go forth and listen responsibly. Don't forget to look at the road once in a while.
Or at 2x speed. Whatever works for your brain. Tune your intake to your internal clock.
See ya.
Goodbye.
This episode was produced using Google Gemini 3 Flash. Text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where our thoughts go from slow takes to facts on cue. We change and follow through. My Weird Prompts, that's the close from slow.